Hi, this is Dr. Linda Mental. Hey, thanks for checking out the podcast of the Dr. Linda Mental Show. You can hear the program live each Saturday morning at 10:30, and there are many more interviews archived from our Faith Radio programs available online at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry.
It's time for the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the Relationship Doctor. And every weekend, we are here and we're doing life together, and we're so glad that you joined us. I'm pleased to have a friend and a colleague, Brittany Wardlaw, on the show today. Brittany is on the front line of dealing with today's topic. It's going to be a little bit of a difficult topic for some of you. We're going to talk about sexual assault. And I want to just say from the top that if you are someone who has experienced sexual assault, something we say might trigger you, and all that means is you might get cued by something we're saying. It might make you remember something. Don't be alarmed by that. If you're in counseling or you're getting help, make sure that you go and you talk to your counselor about that. Welcome, Brittany. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Really excited for this opportunity to be able to share information, enlighten the world, because it's a conversation that doesn't happen often enough.
That's part of the reason we're going to talk about it. But let me tell people who you are. Brittany grew up in South Jersey and accepted Christ at a very young age. Mm-hmm. She's been walking with the Lord for most of your life, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much.
She double majored in international business and business marketing, and then later attended the School of Law at Liberty University. Shortly after she completed her Juris Doctorate, she met and married her husband and best friend, of whom she's been married to for 5 years. Mm-hmm. You have one little girl, and you're about to have another child.
Yes,
it's exciting.
I am. Mm-hmm.
She's in here, so if she gets a little hungry while we're talking, we'll try to ignore those hunger pains.
Right. Step out for a snack.
Yes. Brittany currently serves as the director of the Title IX office at Liberty University, and she and her husband are active in the community. They enjoy traveling, and they look forward to one day opening a child advocacy center.
A lot of the statistics that I deal with currently have to do with the college population.
Right.
And a statistic that a lot of people probably have heard is 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 have been or will be sexually assaulted during their college experience.
That's got to be frightening for parents to hear.
It also helps being aware that this is not something that happens to that person over there. It's very close. And I think that helps with raising awareness and also getting people invested in intervening, in responding, and also knowing that you're not alone if this has happened to you.
Yeah, that's a good point, because sometimes we think about these social problems as happening in only big cities or to somebody else and never touching us. But 1 in 4 in college, that's a pretty big statistic.
Right.
Well, it's been in the news. We heard the stories about Bill Cosby and all the allegations toward him in terms of sexual assault. The really well-known case of the Stanford swimmer, Brock Turner.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such an impactful case, because for one of the first times, I think on such a public forum, we heard the statement of the victim.
Right.
And that got people thinking about the impact of sexual assault on someone's life. And then I think just recently, as we've gone through the presidential election, we've been hearing this term thrown around during the election period, sexual assault. That would be a good place to start, because a lot of people, when they heard the term, were going, is that what sexual assault is?
Right.
Or are they misusing that term? So give us a good definition of sexual assault.
The definition of sexual assault is any physical sexual act that's perpetrated against someone against their will, where they did not give consent or they were not able to give consent.
Okay.
So it can happen when someone is unconscious, when they're sleeping, when they are not aware enough to be able to consent. all of those things can occur and be defined as sexual assault.
At the Stanford case, there was so much in the news about the fact that mm-hmm. the victim had been drinking right. and had passed out.
Right.
And that the assault happened while she was pretty much unconscious.
Right.
What you hear from a lot of people is, well, isn't it her fault then that she put herself in that position?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you respond to people when they say that?
I've had a lot of interesting conversations mm-hmm. around that. One example that sometimes I respond with, depending on who I'm talking to, it's like telling someone walking down a street alone that gets robbed.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You shouldn't have been alone. Or you know what? You shouldn't have been carrying money on you. Or you shouldn't have been walking down that street.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking the blame off of the person that's committing the crime and putting the blame on the person who is on the receiving end of the crime.
On the victim.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't do that with anything else, so why do we insist on doing it when it comes to sexual assault?
It's a very interesting question mm-hmm. because there's always this need in people to think the other person must have done something to
right,
make this
to
happen.
Invite it. Mm-hmm.
I know when I counseled rape victims, they always have that concern. Well, was there something I did? Was there something I promoted this or asked for it? And your definition that without your consent, is that the crux of sexual assault?
Yes, absolutely. Without consent. And that doesn't mean that the absence of no means yes. Because if someone has not given their consent, then they have not invited you to take or commit any type of sexual act against them or towards them. And we try to emphasize in raising awareness and getting people to understand what consent looks like. Someone has to give it. And it has to be freely given, voluntarily, not passively.
When somebody doesn't say no, because maybe the person was terrified or in shock or freezing and unable to speak, mm-hmm. does that make a difference?
Yes, because there's a lot of physiological responses that can happen mm-hmm. in a situation like this. We do give the caveat that consent can be communicated through actions.
Okay.
But we put an emphasis on communicating it verbally because then there's no miscommunication of what your actions were intending. If you're not sure, then assume that you do not have consent unless the person has verbally told you so. And I would say that there is a lot of conversation about, well, did you say no? And saying no is not the standard for whether you had consent or not. Like I mentioned earlier, your body can have physiological responses to the situation.
Yeah, it's trauma. It's mm-hmm. boundary violation. I can think of it from a neuroscience point of view where the feeling part of the brain gets hijacked and you're not thinking during that time when you are in a situation where you might be assaulted or there's a potential of rape. Your brain freezes up and you don't get into the thinking part.
Exactly. And you always hear conversation about fight or flight.
Yes.
But there's also a big conversation surrounding sexual assault about fight, flight, or freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think of the illustration or the visual of a possum. What does a possum do? Plays dead in the road. That's the freeze response mm-hmm. to the fear that's happening or the trauma that that animal is experiencing. And that's the same thing that happens with humans, especially when you're in a situation where your body is potentially about to be violated. And that control is being taken away from you. So the freeze response is not uncommon. And that's one of the messages that we try to get out because so many people are not aware that, yes, you can physically freeze in a situation like that. And that does not mean you're giving consent.
If you're the victim and you have experienced that and you did freeze, you should not put guilt on yourself for
right.
that. I should have done something else. I should have fought back. I should have mm-hmm. yelled. I should have screamed. It's like Monday morning quarterbacking a lot mm-hmm. of times with these incidents where you look back and you think, what else could I have done?
Right.
But during the time, you just have no concept of that. Well, we're just getting started with this. We're going to learn a whole lot more about what Title IX means and what you can do if there's been a sexual assault. We're going to get a little more information about it. Stay with us as we learn more about the impact of sexual assault and how you or someone you know may be affected. More on the Dr. Linda Mintel Show with guest attorney Brittany Wardlaw when we return. Are you a mom or a dad trying to do your best to raise a healthy weight child in an unhealthy eating culture? Do you often struggle with how to respond when your child asks if she is fat? or if he needs to lose weight? Do you wonder what is normal and how do I best impact my child and his or her eating habits? Well, hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental, and my book, Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World, teaches parents how to raise healthy kids in an overscheduled, fast food, video game world by making simple choices, easy changes, and instilling good habits that will improve everyone's life today and forever. Winner of the Mom's Choice Award, Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World, will give you this confidence, the confidence you need to take charge of your child's eating and raise a healthy weight child.
Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World. Available on Dr. Linda's website, drlindamental.com, and available online where books are sold.
For more information on today's topic, visit drlindamental.com, where you can read her blogs or sign up for her newsletter.
Well, welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. In case you're just joining us, I have a very special guest, attorney and Title IX director at Liberty University, Brittany Wardlaw. She's in the studio today to help us to understand more about sexual assault and what to do if this happens to us or somebody that we know. Brittany, you are the Title IX director.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what that is and how you got into doing this kind of work.
Sure. Title IX is a federal amendment that was issued in 1972 that says no student receiving their education at an institution that receives any type of federal funds has a right to be discriminated against. No one should be discriminated against on the basis of their gender under Title IX.
Is it just sexual discrimination or is this racial?
It's gender.
It's just gender.
Mm-hmm. Gender-based discrimination.
Okay.
You kind of get into Title VI and different things like that. Those are more race-focused. The focus was more on athletics and making sure there was equality for women's sports as far as what men were receiving, resources, funding, different things like that. But then it has evolved because gender-based discrimination does cover a lot of different areas. In the early 2000s, there was some guidance issued by the Department of Education that focused on responding to sexual harassment. And then by 2011, a lot of people are familiar with the Dear Colleague letter that came out, and the government was very clear on the guidance that said the school has a responsibility to respond to any type of gender-based discrimination, which includes sexual violence.
So this is on college campuses?
Yes.
Okay.
There is a lot of focus now on K-12.
Schools, yes, in general, mm-hmm, in terms of what's, mm-hmm, going on with sexual harassment, assault.
Okay. Right. In 2011, the primary focus was institutions of higher education.
Okay.
But I will tell you that right now it is definitely an issue that is being addressed in K-12 schools.
That far back with young kids.
Yeah, but it's really important because we have this conversation often that a lot of times by the time students get to the college level, there's an indoctrination of what's appropriate behavior,
mm-hmm,
because it wasn't addressed K-12 and it's already an issue. So then it gets to college and you're trying to respond to all of these ways of life and these ways of thinking that have been accepted for 15 years of their lives. This is how they functioned and this is what was okay. And now we want to come down hard when they get to college because we have very specific requirements and guidelines on how we're supposed to respond.
How did you get into wanting to help people with this? I mean, what motivated you with that?
Very interesting story. Well, I think it's interesting. In law school, I struggled with why I was in law school. It was very difficult. I didn't understand why in the world did I do this to myself? Why am I here? Lord Jesus, please tell me. And it was a breaking moment in time for me where the Lord made it very clear. He said, I want you to advocate on behalf of people who have lost their voice. You have a real passion, mm-hmm, to step in for people that either don't speak up for themselves, aren't able to. My mom always gave me a hard time because she felt like I butt into people's business when I'm not supposed to. But really, it was because I cared. I'm thinking, this poor person, this is what they're trying to say. This is what they're trying to convey. This is what they're feeling. And they don't have the courage to say for themselves. And so it was made very clear to me in law school, that's what you're going to do. And in my mind, it was always the thought of children. I'm going to do it for children. But what I've seen just being in higher education, there's still a very childlike mentality for a lot of the students that are here. And so I started working for Liberty after I finished law school until my thought was my husband will be done with school shortly and, you know, this will help out.
Yeah, yeah.
I was in student conduct and then the Dear Colleague letter came out and there was a lot that the school needed to do.
Yeah, there was a real need to organize this and make it a real office.
Right. And so I was starting to be given the responsibilities of Title IX, oh, take care of this, take care of this, take care of this. And then it evolved to the point that, okay, this should probably be a standalone.
A full-time job.
Yes, you need a staff. This needs to happen fast. That's been my journey.
Why do you think it's so prevalent on college campuses? We find story after story. There was one in Vanderbilt University of aggravated rape and aggravated sexual battery when they assaulted a student in a dorm room. Why, by that age?
A lot of different reasons. One of the reasons specifically is that there is a mandate or requirement for a response. Even when these things are happening in real life.
In the regular culture.
Right. There's not a requirement. No one's saying we have to do something about it. Yes, they can report criminally. But if you talk to victims and reporting parties and their perspective of how that is going to play out, what's the likelihood of somebody being held responsible for what they did to me in a criminal process? It happens. It definitely does. But it's a very difficult process. And so we have a mandate to respond in the educational realm, and our standard of proof is much lower. We can find people responsible with less evidence than is needed in a criminal system. So you will see the finding of responsibility often. There's also a culture of accepted norm or accepted habits or lifestyle that often happens on college campuses, whether it's on teams, in dorms, in fraternities, in sororities. There's an acceptance of things that otherwise would not be acceptable outside of
these
walls.
And I think that's a big part of it. When you start looking at the way it's assumed that you're going to be sexually active, it's assumed that you're going to drink heavily, it's part of the culture, and yet those are the kinds of things that get people into very serious trouble, and it can create problems for people for years based on their college experiences.
Right. It's kind of a double-edged sword. You have the conversation about what happens at secular universities and what's an accepted norm. But then you come onto the faith-based campus or community and there is an accepted norm of what you should or shouldn't have been doing that creates a stigma or discouragement of reporting. Well, I shouldn't have been engaging in any type of premarital activity, or I shouldn't have been drinking in the first place. So then it creates this other wall or resistance to report or come forward about it too.
So it's a little more difficult in a faith-based institution to get people to acknowledge because they're feeling bad about their behavior, whereas maybe they wouldn't feel bad about it in a secular campus.
Right.
And then they have to go forward, and then people are always concerned about the consequences to other people, and yet the victim is the one who is going to experience the most consequences, probably, based on what violation sexually does to a person. I don't think people have an understanding of that. Do you think sexual assault is sin?
Oh, absolutely.
Do we talk about that in the church as sin?
There isn't a whole lot of conversation about sexual assault and the fact that this is something that the Lord does not approve of and does not condone, and that this is sin.
It's in the Bible over and over, and it's pretty severe consequences for people who did commit some kind of sexual assault.
Yeah, and not only that, there's consequences in so many directions. Consequences for the victim, consequences of the offender, consequences of loved ones. There's so much ancillary damage that happens as a result of this type of sin.
It's sin against another person. It's sin against a relationship. Mm-hmm. It's a sin in betraying trust and destroying relationships. It's even a sin in some ways against the community because of the violation and the boundaries and the lack of trust. There's so much more we've got to do. We've got one more segment. We're going to go to a break real quick. Stay with us. We've got so much more we want to talk about in terms of sexual assault. But when we come back, let's focus a little bit on healing and help. More to come after the break. Stay with us.
Hey folks, Chris Weigel here to let you know Dr. Linda's on Instagram. Follow her at Dr. Linda Mental.
This is the Mental Health Minute. Here's Dr. Linda.
Everyone worries, don't they? Well, just listen to the nightly news or read the economic forecast or even talk to your family. Hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental. Opportunities to worry present themselves many times during our day. So why would God tell us not to worry when it almost seems like it's impossible? First, He knows the physical damage worry does to our bodies. Second, He wants to calm us down by taking the burden of control away from us. Hey, we don't have control. No matter how much we think we do, He does. And third, He wants us to trust Him. The root of worry is doubting God. Doubt is not trusting that God is who He says He is, or He will do what He says He will do. So every day, take your worries to God. Rehearse His goodness, accept His grace, and walk in the confidence that He is in control and He's working all things for your good. Well, you're listening to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, and today's special guest is attorney and Title IX director, Brittany Wardlaw. Today's topic is sexual assault. It's kind of a difficult topic. We've already talked about, Brittany, that it's not a topic that's discussed often enough, probably, mm-hmm. but it's so important that we're aware of what happens to people and how we can help people who have been victims of sexual assault. Let's start with that. If somebody has been a victim or if somebody knows someone who has been sexually assaulted, how do people move forward from such a difficult thing?
Linda, I wanted to address specifically the resource question. With Title IX, there's a lot of requirements and things that we do as far as responding and making sure that remediating in any way that we can for a student. We have a couple of different options. I would advise people to tell a student that there are confidential resources available to you. There are student counseling services available. If you do want to report it or you want to give someone some insight on where to report it, they can go to student counseling services and it will literally not leave there.
So they can decide whether to report or not to report.
Yes.
So sometimes people can say, I don't want to report this officially.
Right.
Right? I don't want to go any further with this.
Right. It can get a little nuanced because if they do share with someone that is considered a responsible employee or a mandatory reporter, then mm-hmm. that person does have to report the information to
okay.
my office.
Okay.
But if they were to share with their roommate, if they were to share with a friend, they can always advise them, hey, if you don't want there to be an investigation, you don't want anyone involved, you just want to talk. Student Counseling Services is available to you.
Okay, that's good. Yeah.
They will either see them, they can refer them out. When it comes to my office, if we have jurisdiction over the person that committed the harm, then we will do an investigation.
Which means they're a student.
Yes.
If they're a student or they're a faculty or there's somebody staff, there's somebody on the campus.
Right.
Okay.
Right. We will respond with an investigation. Now, the reporting party can request confidentiality. They can say, hey, I want to come forward with this, but please don't say my name.
Okay.
And it's my responsibility to assess the situation and say, okay, for your safety and the safety of the campus, can I grant you that request? I always want to try to give deference to granting it mm-hmm. because I don't want to add another situation where the control is taken away from the
yeah.
victim again.
Feel powerless again.
Right. So yeah. I'm always going to err on the side of trying to grant that request, but mm-hmm. sometimes I can't.
Yeah.
Just for the safety of that person or the safety of others. So when it comes to my office, our primary objective is to stop the assault harassment from happening, prevent it from happening, and remediate.
So you're talking about on any campus, anywhere in the country,
mm-hmm.
these resources are available because of Title IX, because it's a federal program.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter where you live, you're listening to this. If that happens on a campus near you, they will have these resources set
yes.
up.
As long as they're receiving federal funding,
yeah.
which is 99.9%
yeah, I don't know how many schools are doing that without, but there's probably a few that don't have it.
There are a few. And then we also always let them know that if you want to take the criminal route, we can help you report this to the police as
okay.
well.
Okay. And there are people who do that.
Yes.
And they involve the police, especially if there's been a rape or some very specific crime that has
yes.
been committed in the process.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important for people to know all of that because you do feel very isolated, alone, embarrassed, shamed in this process.
Mm-hmm.
And that is exactly the kinds of things that make people paralyzed and not do anything.
Right.
And yet you're walking around with all this emotional upset and trauma and difficulty, and it impacts so many parts of your day
mm-hmm.
that you probably need to get help.
Right.
If somebody is saying, do people get better from this once it's happened? What do you say to the person?
We've seen a lot of success stories of people that have experienced sexual assault and have been able to come through on the other side and want to tell their story
wow.
and want people to know this happened to me and I survived.
Yeah.
This is my story.
How important is faith in that process?
I'd want to be able to talk about that because it is very important, because for a lot of people that we work with,
mm-hmm.
their faith is their foundation. And this is what brought me through. But we have to be very careful and not push the faith message to a victim, because sometimes the person that harmed them was someone of the faith,
right,
a leader
right.
in the community or something like that. We don't know where they are mentally and emotionally. We try to be very careful with that. It's a process for each person. And what I want to emphasize is not beating yourself up if you haven't gotten to the place that you can forgive, or you haven't gotten to a place of forgiveness, because it is a process.
Yeah.
This isn't something that happens overnight. And sometimes people feel like, this happened, forgive them, move on. And it's not that
simple. It's not that easy.
Right.
Yeah. Well, here's a scripture I want to leave you with. Psalm 9:9 is a great way for us to end. The Lord is a stronghold for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. I know you may have questions if this happens to you. Big question is, where was God when all this happened? He's there, and it's a difficult thing to process. You may need some help. So if you or someone you know has suffered sexual assault, know you're not alone. There are people trained to help you, like Brittany, and walk you through the healing process. Find a Christian counselor who specializes in sexual assault and trauma and get help today. Well, that's all the time we have. Many thanks to our producer, Pam Miller, our social media director, Cody Gokenauer, our post-producer, Chris Underation, and thanks, of course, to my special guest, Brittany Wardlaw, and all the wonderful work she is doing to help victims of sexual assault. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
The Dr. Linda Mental Show is a production of WQLU-FM 90.9 in Lynchburg, Virginia.